On this edition for Sunday, November 29th, the latest on the presidential transition. COVID cases are still on the rise as lawmakers grapple with shutdowns and reopenings. And celebrating the 30th anniversary of a cultural movement that raised awareness for HIV/AIDS. Next on PBS NewsHour Weekend.
PBS NewsHour Weekend is made possible by Sue and Edgar Wackenheim III, the Anderson Family Fund, Bernard and Denise Schwartz, the Cheryl and Philip Milstein Family, Barbara Hope Zuckerberg, the Leonard and Norma Chlorfine Foundation, Charles Rosenblum. We try to live in the moment to not miss what's right in front of us. At Mutual of America, we believe taking care of tomorrow can help you make the most of today. Mutual of America Financial Group, retirement services and investments.
For 25 years, Consumer Cellular has been offering no-contract wireless plans designed to help people do more of what they like. Our U.S.-based customer service team can help find a plan that fits you. To learn more, visit consumercellular.tv.
Additional support has been provided by and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us. President Donald Trump lost another round in court late yesterday, but continued to claim without evidence that he won the election. President-elect Joe Biden won the popular vote and the projected Electoral College majority needed. In a unanimous decision issued late yesterday, Pennsylvania's Supreme Court threw out a lower court order preventing the state from certifying dozens of contests and challenging all mail-in ballots. One of the justices wrote, "They have failed to allege that even a single mail-in ballot was fraudulently cast or counted." In another loss for the president, Wisconsin completed its ballot recount today and confirmed Mr. Biden won the state. Dane County reported a 45-vote gain for President Trump. On Friday, Milwaukee County, the other county targeted in a recount that the Trump campaign paid for, reported a 132-vote gain for President-elect Biden. The Trump campaign paid $3 million to learn Biden's victory grew by 87 more votes. The president returned to the White House from Camp David this afternoon. This morning, he spent 45 minutes speaking with Fox News by phone, repeating a long list of grievances, including election fraud, which he has not proved. Mr. Biden had no public events scheduled today, but after returning to his home in Wilmington from his vacation home, he slipped and twisted his ankle while playing with one of his dogs. A spokesperson said the president-elect went to the doctor to have the injury checked out of an abundance of caution. The COVID-19 pandemic continues to sweep across the United States, with death rates now approaching the peak numbers from last spring. The New York Times database shows COVID-19-related deaths increasing 29% over the average number just 2 weeks ago. Last Wednesday, more than 2,300 deaths were reported nationwide, surpassing 2,000 in one day for the first time since early May. Despite a rise in cases and deaths, New York City's mayor made a surprising announcement this morning. The largest school district in the country will begin to reopen in-person elementary classrooms in phases starting December 7th.
And we know that if you put a heavy emphasis on testing, and you continually reinforce those health and safety measures, you monitor carefully with the Situation Room, we know we can keep our schools safe for the duration and link up to that day when we have the vaccine that changes the whole reality for all of us.
The new plan also phases out hybrid learning with the goal of five-day-a-week classroom learning. Globally, according to Johns Hopkins University Coronavirus Tracking Project, the virus is still spreading with more than 62 million infections now reported and more than 1.4 million deaths. Today in South Korea, officials announced new restrictions as the virus reemerges there, banning year-end parties and limiting gatherings starting this coming week. In the United Kingdom, more than 60 protesters were arrested yesterday in a demonstration opposing restrictions and vaccinations. A partial lockdown in Britain is due to end on Tuesday. For more on the UK's response to COVID-19 and to their Brexit transition, which is now just a month away, I spoke with Frank Langfitt, NPR correspondent and author of The Shanghai Free Taxi. Frank, thank you so much for joining us. Boris Johnson is lifting England's second lockdown this week on Wednesday. Will this be a tiered system? How is this going to play out?
Yeah, it's going to be a tiered system, Michael. And what we'll see is the second and third tier, which are high and very high, which is the vast majority of England will be in, there'll be some differences. So where I am, just outside of London, we'll be in tier two. So our corner pubs will start to open, but they'll have to close at 11 o'clock. People still will not be able to mix, different households mix inside. And then I think the big difference you'll see when you get up into tier three is really shutting down restaurants and pubs only for takeaway delivery, that sort of thing. Those are some of the big differences. But what you're seeing already is complaints among members of parliament who say, wait a second, these tiers are blanket in some areas where you'll take one county like Kent and say, even though it varies a great deal in terms of the COVID rate, make it all tier three, where you can just drive to the next county 5 minutes away and you can go have a drink at a pub. So they argue it doesn't make sense and that it's damaging economies here.
Frank, we've seen anti-lockdown protests kind of throughout Europe and France and certainly there in England. Will they continue?
I think they probably will. You know, we had a lot of arrests yesterday. People were actually marching through the West End of London. That's the theater district. And it was a mix of people. I've covered these all fall, really. Some of it is anti-vaxxers. Some of it is COVID conspiracy theorists. Some of this are QAnon people. Even with President Trump on the way out, QAnon still resonates here in the United Kingdom. And there's a feeling from people's perspective, the people who come out for these rallies, that at a minimum, COVID has been grossly exaggerated. It's doing a lot of damage to the economy. And they do believe, some of them believe, that there's a global cabal that wants to actually depopulate the world. And that's why this is happening.
Frank, there's a lot of COVID-19 lockdown fatigue. We see it all over the place, certainly here in the States. Have people been complying there with the protocols to social distance, to stay inside and so forth?
Yeah, Michael, it's getting worse and worse. I think that, for instance, as I ride my bike around my town outside of London here, and other than the fact that the stores are shut, you can't really tell that we're in a lockdown. You would never think it was a lockdown. You know, Boris Johnson, many months ago, his chief advisor violated a much stricter lockdown that we had that went in March. And I think that really damaged the reputation of Boris Johnson and the government here so that people pay less attention, frankly, to what he says.
Frank, a month away from Brexit taking effect, where do things stand? Are people ready for this?
No, they're not ready for it at all. And I'm glad you asked that question. I mean, what's up in the air is, will the United Kingdom leave with some kind of thin deal with the European Union, or will they walk away with nothing? But I think the fact that it has taken so long, Michael, it's again coming down to a last minute decisions, is pretty shocking, given that this is the biggest thing. This is going to change the course of modern British history. And yet it feels like they still haven't entirely taken it seriously or put kind of the great diligence into it that they should have.
What are the risks of a no Brexit deal? Is that even possible after all this time?
If you'd asked me 6 months ago, I'd say, gee, they would have figured something out. I think what will happen is, if there's a no deal Brexit, you will see customs and tariffs and border posts going up between the United Kingdom and the European Union. You could see giant, what they call tailbacks here, we call them backups in America, of thousands of trucks at the border post at Dover to get on the ferry, to get through the channel. And it would do even more damage to the economy than we're already going through. And things are pretty bad here economically. I mean, most of the stores are shut down. On December 2nd, we'll begin to loosen up. Things will get a little bit better. But it's economy's in pretty bad shape right now.
Frank, to switch gears, we just came through a big election here in the States, as you know. Has the prime minister there, Boris Johnson, shown how he will work with President-elect Biden?
Oh, absolutely. I think what he's going to try to do is not focus on Brexit at all. He knows Joe Biden didn't like Brexit, was against it. And he's going to focus on things where he's actually relatively closely aligned with Vice President-elect Biden. things like climate change, those kinds of issues where he's actually much closer to Biden than he would have been to Trump. Trump, of course, favored Brexit, and so he was somewhat valuable to Boris Johnson. But beyond that, Johnson has much more in common with Biden than he would have had with Trump when it comes to policy.
And Frank Langford there with NPR, talking to us from England. Thank you, Frank.
Happy to do it, Michael.
In East Africa, six explosions overnight rocked the Eritrean capital of Asmara, according to the U.S. Embassy. It was not immediately clear if the explosions were related to fighting in the region of Tigray in neighboring Ethiopia. Yesterday, Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed declared victory against the Tigray People's Liberation Front. The ethnic faction, which runs the northern region, has been battling federal troops for more than 3 weeks. Communication is largely cut off in the Tigray region, and there is no independent confirmation of the Prime Minister's claim. Nigerians in the northern state of Borno held a mass burial today after an attack by suspected Islamic militants left more than 40 dead. The attack took place yesterday, a day when residents were casting their votes for local government councils for the first time in 13 years. The attackers beheaded about 30 men, including many fishermen and rice farmers. The Nigerian government has blamed the Islamic militant group Boko Haram for the attacks, but so far no group has claimed responsibility. Security forces continue to search for dozens of people still listed as missing. Officials in Argentina are investigating the death of soccer star Diego Maradona, who died this past week of a heart attack. Local police today searched the home and office of Maradona's personal doctor after a judge granted a request from prosecutors. Justice officials did not provide a reason for launching the investigation. Maradona's doctor is cooperating and says there was no negligence. But on Thursday, Maradona's personal lawyer asked local officials to look into the soccer star's death, citing a slow response from emergency services. David Prowse, the towering English actor who played Darth Vader in the original Star Wars films, died yesterday. Prowse was the actor inside the film villain's suit, beginning with the first Star Wars film in 1977. But he was not the voice of the iconic character. The producers had James Earl Jones replace his voice. The 6'6" former weightlifter said he was offered a different Star Wars role but chose Darth Vader because, quote, "You always remember the bad guys." David Prowse was 85 years old. For more international and national news, go to pbs.org/newshour. The coronavirus pandemic and public service messages about the global health crisis share some parallels to the AIDS-HIV crisis decades ago. Back then, little was known about the spread of the illness, and the stigma associated with contracting it was high. But one organization that helped to change that is celebrating an anniversary in the lead up to World AIDS Day this Tuesday, December 1st. The Red Hot organization was founded to help raise money and awareness around the AIDS crisis. Dedicated to fighting HIV/AIDS through pop culture, the organization has raised millions and has helped to decrease the stigma associated with AIDS. To celebrate its 30th anniversary this year, Red Hot is re-releasing popular track lists. NewsHour Weekend's Christopher Booker has more.
Hi, I'm Richard Gere, and we're here tonight because AIDS is a reality that demands personal action by everyone.
To the ears of a 2020 audience, there's nothing particularly noteworthy about this clip of Richard Gere. But 30 years ago, when it originally aired on ABC, Gere's introduction to the Red Hot and Blue special, a music video montage benefit, was groundbreaking.
Now, here is the most important thing you need to know. If you have sex, wear a condom.
Proudly for him and for us, it was the first time the word condom was mentioned on American television outside of a news context. And that just it even sounds absurd to say that today, 30 years later, because condoms, you know, protecting people from a viral pandemic would seem to be very obvious. But just like today, there was a lot of politics involved back then.
John Carlin was responsible for the words Gere delivered. In collaboration with his partner, filmmaker Lee Blake, Red Hot and Blue was part of a new multimedia advocacy organization called Red Hot.
We wanted to create a propaganda organization through pop culture. And music, in particular, is really powerful to reach people that don't agree with you.
Describing themselves as a creative consortium dedicated to fighting AIDS through pop culture, Red Hot was born out of New York's downtown art and music scene of the late 70s and 80s, a scene that would be among the earliest to be upended by the AIDS crisis.
AIDS in New York in the 80s was a lot like COVID is today, where it just sort of came out of nowhere, and then all of a sudden the world changed. It was all of a sudden young people who you associated with, who you admired, you know, got sick, and many of them died. And that was one of the things that we really, when we started Red Hot, that was really one of the great motivations. The rest of the world didn't know what was about to happen.
The first effort, Red Hot and Blue, was a compilation album of Cole Porter songs performed by an eclectic group of artists like David Byrne, U2, Katie Lang, Iggy Pop, and Deborah Harry.
And have you heard the story of a boy, a girl, unrequited love?
Sounds like pure soap opera, I may cry.
Why Cole Porter?
First of all, the songs were just great, and they were sort of underutilized. Nobody really since Ella Fitzgerald and Frank Sinatra, my parents' generation, had really done the songs. But the other very powerful reason was that Cole Porter was a gay American artist who had to be closeted for his entire career.
An excited crowd sees the arrival of Cole Porter, the great songwriter.
We used to call it the Trojan horse approach. You know, there's this, oh, there's a U2 track, it's Annie Lennox, it's Debbie Harry and Iggy Pop. Isn't this like really funny? And they're singing Cole Porter songs. Isn't that weird? But it's like kind of cool and those songs sound great. And then all of a sudden, boom, you're talking about the stigma around being LGBTQ or wearing a condom or the fact that AIDS, you know, is a preventable disease that at that time, the president of the United States, Ronald Reagan, wouldn't say the word AIDS.
The more cases of HIV infection we can prevent now, the less cases of AIDS will be seen in the future.
Red Hot and Blue would sell over 1 million copies worldwide, and the accompanying film was seen in over 30 countries. The music videos, directed by filmmakers including Jim Jarmusch and Jonathan Demme, were aired across MTV. After 30 years and 20 compilation albums featuring more than 500 artists from around the world, Red Hot has generated millions of dollars in the fight against HIV and AIDS.
Where do you think the Red Hot organization fits in the way America changed the way it thought about sexuality?
One was making sure that there were significant LGBTQ artists on the record, like Katie Lang and Jimmy Somerville. But in an odd way, the most important thing, I think, when I look back on it, is how many artists on the project were straight. Nobody thought that Bono or David Byrne were gay because they were doing an AIDS benefit. It was sort of like, okay, it's safe. It's safe to not only embrace our LGBTQ neighbors, family, but also to say this is not a disease that is really about this.
It's also interesting thinking again in contemporary terms, the power of acknowledgement from someone or a group that is outside of the group. For instance, how white America has really struggled to say Black Lives Matter. It's a similar dynamic, if you will.
David Byrne said yes because his sister-in-law, Tina Chow, was HIV positive. And it's a very important lesson that empathy is often born through proximity, knowing someone, you know, being moved by someone's story. And that to me is the power of art and culture, ultimately.
In recognition of their 30th anniversary, Red Hot will be re-releasing a number of their compilation albums, including Red Hot and Blue, on December 1st, World AIDS Day.
Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you.
Last spring, as the coronavirus sent tens of millions into lockdowns, one musician captured the attention of the world as she took her cello to a Paris rooftop and serenaded a mostly silent city. Months later, Camille Thomas continues to make music in some unexpected spaces. French museums the pandemic has closed to visitors. On Thursday, 32-year-old Camille Thomas turned the Museum of Decorative Arts in Paris into a pandemic-era concert hall. The audience for her cello performance of Maurice Ravel's Kaddish was a production crew and the magnificent artworks watching silently along the walls.
To play this in empty museum is also very symbolic because I wanted to symbolize with these images the loneliness of musicians without the public, of museums without visitors, and the fact that we are just waiting for the public. We are not dead. We're just passion trying to be creative and still bring and create beauty.
Last March, Thomas became a symbol of perseverance and hope when she took her cello to the rooftop of her home in Paris and then posted her performance online as France began its first lockdown during the coronavirus pandemic.
I posted this video in March on my social medias, and the response from all the world was incredible. I received messages from really everywhere, people telling me that seeing these images and hearing this music, seeing Paris, that just made them feel good and that it gave them hope.
In the months that followed, Thomas, a successful recording artist who performs with orchestras worldwide, began to play online concerts alone in the halls of museums and theaters in and around Paris, all now closed to the public. Places where the music, combined with the beauty of the art and architecture, can work together to bring hope for the future.
Of course, people need medical care in this pandemic time, but it also need care for the soul. So my message is very simple. It's to say that beauty is there and hope is there, and we just have to survive and keep our heart open to art.
That's all for this edition of PBS NewsHour Weekend. For the latest news updates, visit pbs.org/newshour. I'm Michael Hill. Thanks for watching, stay healthy, and have a good night.
PBS NewsHour Weekend is made possible by Sue and Edgar Wackenheim III, the Anderson Family Fund, Bernard and Denise Schwartz, the Cheryl and Philip Milstein family, Barbara Hope Zuckerberg, the Leonard and Norma Chlorfine Foundation, Charles Rosenblum. We try to live in the moment to not miss what's right in front of us. At Mutual of America, we believe taking care of tomorrow can help you make the most of today. Mutual of America Financial Group, retirement services and investments. Additional support has been provided by Consumer Cellular and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.